Everyone has a story. How they got here, where they met along the way, the choices they made, the dreams they are chasing. Welcome to Anthologies of Hope. Thank you for joining us for this week's bonus episode of Anthologies of Hope, bringing you another live Conversations Cafe event recorded from Sip of Hope Coffee Bar in Chicago's Logan Square neighborhood. As always, I'm your host, Rick Osowski, and I'm not a mental health professional in any way, simply a mental health advocate with a passion for storytelling. And we're jumping right in this week to another episode of Conversations Cafe. That's right, we've got two live episodes this month. As always, as we mentioned, Conversations Cafe is a monthly live podcast recording at the Sip of Hope Coffee Bar, featuring education and open forum dialogue on the intersections of mental health within our communities on a variety of awesome rotating topics. This education programming is brought to you by Hope for the Day, with support from their partners in prevention, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention of Illinois, and Banyan Treatment Centers. This week, we recorded our live episode with some furry friends, featuring discussion and education on therapy animals, emotional support animals, and service animals. Titled Pause to Cope, The Power of Pets, we had a packed house of Hope for the Day family members bringing their experience and expertise to the conversation surrounding the benefits and love of furry, scaled, and feathered friends. Our guests this week included Jackie Carmody, a licensed clinical professional counselor and registered board-certified art therapist, Pam Barron-Kaplan, a professional pet loss, grief recovery, and life coach, Ryan Shannon, a United States veteran and director for Hope for the Day's upcoming Project Red Team, Roger Rosenquist, director of the Chicagoland chapter of Pets for Vets, as well as Sandy Thomas and Tesla, Sip of Hope's resident therapy dog team and leaders of a therapy dog ministry at Willow Creek Church in Barrington, Illinois. So as you can see, it was an eventful evening to be sure. Pam's upcoming book, titled Tales of Unconditional Love, Your Journey to the Other Side of Pet Loss Grief, is available August 15th this year and can be pre-ordered today. You can find the Amazon pre-order link via www.anthologiesofhope.com/pause. That's P-A-W-S. The upcoming Project Red Team, which Ryan goes into detail on, is a new initiative being launched soon that will bring the proactive suicide prevention mission of Hope for the Day to the military and veteran communities. Originating from the military saying of "Remember everyone deployed," Hope for the Day's Project Red mission is to remind everyone deployed that it's okay not to be okay. Be sure to keep an eye out on Hope for the Day's social media for more details to come soon. Also during this week's live event, a special shout out to partner in prevention Busy Beaver Button Company, who made the collaborative piece of community button art that was dedicated and hung proudly on the wall of Sip of Hope. If you're in town and visit the coffee shop, be sure to check it out right next to the Lauren Astor mural and see all of the self-expression captured during our live June event, celebrating parts of our own individual identities as we honored the 50th anniversary of Pride. Every week, we'd like to remind you that if you're in a time of crisis, we'll be covering a range of potentially difficult topics. Please use this as a warning to seek help and come back to listen once you're in a more positive season. If you are in need of help, an abundance of international resources can be found on the Find Help pages from Hope for the Day and To Write Love in Our Arms. Hope for the Day can be found at hftd.org/find-help. To Write Love in Our Arms can be found at twloha.com/find-help. As always, you can find us at anthologiesofhope.com, on Facebook and Instagram as Anthologies of Hope, on Twitter as Anthologies Pod, or email us directly at anthologiesofhope, all one word, no punctuation, at gmail.com. Please like, subscribe, and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. We won't wait any further. This week's episode of Anthologies of Hope and Conversations Cafe. Pause to Cope, The Power of Pets.
And welcome to Conversations Cafe. I'm Carl Evans, Director of Programs and Operations for Hope for the Day. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. Conversations Cafe is presented by Hope for the Day, hosted out of the Sip of Hope Coffee Bar, the world's first coffee bar, where 100% of the net proceeds go to support suicide prevention and mental health education. Conversations Cafe is presented by Banyan Treatment Center and American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and is produced by Anthologies of Hope. Tonight we have a really special episode, as all of them are, we think. This one is an opportunity to talk about the intersection of mental health and animals and pets in our lives. We have a whole host of great guests with us talking about various different nuances and intersections with the importance and impact that animals can have in our lives. So I'm not going to have too big of a little opening monologue other than to say we're going to be introducing an art installation that was part of a previous broadcast, our episode titled Living Out Loud. And we created this project using custom-made buttons for people to sort of share what they were proud of. And we're going to be hanging it up here in Sip of Hope, and we'll be asking people to participate in making other buttons sponsored by Busy Beaver, our friends at Busy Beaver, throughout the rest of the month. But we're going to jump right into this episode with our very first guest. She is an LCPC-ATR-BC and a friend of the Hope for the Day family who's worked with us on a number of projects, including being a lead facilitator of Raising a Resilient Child. Ladies and gentlemen, give a big hand for Jackie Carmody.
Hi, everybody. I'm Jackie. Like Carl said, I'm a licensed clinical professional counselor and a registered art therapist. The BC stands for board certified. Woo, just passed that test this year.
Heck yeah.
Yes, woo. So I am currently working in private practice with individuals for individual therapy, family therapy, and group therapy. So this topic is really awesome because a lot of the clients that I work with, they are owners of pets, and so I get to see the direct impact that the benefits of owning a pet can have on someone's mental health and well-being, and also introducing them to that idea if they're noticing that they do need something in their life that they can take care of, that can they can show up for, take some accountability. I've noticed that owning a pet can really meet that need. Also, from my history working within an inpatient and outpatient psychiatric facility, we would actually have therapy pets come in, and I would see the huge impact that it would have on the staff, the clients, and just everybody that was involved, seeing how just for even an hour that they would be spending with the pets, if they were just able to separate themselves from that hospital setting, that was huge. It was such an amazing experience to witness, and also when I'm in the middle of my workday, to be able to pet a therapy dog, that was pretty awesome for me, and it really helped me with my own mental health. So to give just some background on how I've directly seen ESAs and therapy dogs be really beneficial, and even just owning a pet being beneficial for my clients, I have been working with a lot of people who just suffer from, you know, anxiety, depression, and the ability to wake up and have something to take care of right away has just improved ADLs, which are daily living skills where you're doing your hygiene, you're feeding yourself, you're getting out the door. And so having a pet really can improve those by being accountable of, okay, maybe I don't feel like doing this for myself, but I'm going to wake up and do this for an animal and that I love and I care for. And being able to see that direct benefit and improvement from something outside of yourself can have huge benefits, because sometimes when we're taking care of ourselves day to day, we get lost in that and it just feels like such a routine that we can't see it. But when we're walking the dog or we're feeding the dog or we're giving the dog a bath, that can really up our own ability to take care of our ADLs. So with working with clients, I really see that having a jump start of getting them moving and just taking care of their overall well-being. So to kind of go into more of the statistics and clinical sides just of the overall benefits of owning a pet or working with an ESA or a therapy dog, we do have these facts that we can send electronically, or we'll be able to give them to you later. So don't quote me on them. They are all research-based, where I can give you we can give you the stats. But just owning a pet or, you know, petting a dog has a benefit of lowering your blood pressure and lowering cortisol levels. So the act of just taking time to sit down and be mindful of another living being and saying, okay, I'm going to take this time. I'm going to, you know, when you pet a dog, it's just relaxing. And so the effect it has on your body, it is responding in that way where your blood pressure is lowering and you are decreasing your ability to handle stress in that moment, or decreasing the stress level in that moment so that you can handle things in a better way or just be mindful as you go about your day. Also with children, therapy animals, ESA, and owning a pet is shown to have amazing results with just improving social skills, especially with populations of children who have autism, teaching them how to interact with something, teaching them kindness, patience, and just how to interact with something, keeping safe boundaries, managing impulsive urges, because they're able to see an animal directly responding to their energy level. So it helps them meet that energy level to calm themselves down or just improve their social awareness in general. Also, amazing benefits with elderly individuals and empty nesters. So I don't know if anyone's parents are empty nesters. Currently, mine are this year, and I have noticed that them owning a pet has been an immense help because they don't have their children around anymore to, you know, keep tabs on or just, you know, give them that sense of purpose. So having a pet has been amazing for my mom. She knows, all right, I'm going to take the dog for a walk. I'm going to go to the dog park. I'm going to interact with my friends who are also dog owners. Or it gives people kind of a reason to get out of the house and do something. Or like I said earlier, just get up and do those like routine skills that can sometimes be really hard to do if you're in a low place. So a few more stats. I don't want to take too much time with the stats because you guys will get this information later if you want it. Just overall improving a sense of well-being, and the research shows that there's actually a decrease in doctor visits in, I think, Germany and then another country, I can't remember right now, of people who have been owning pets. Their mental health is significantly improved, where it's lowered their need for doctor visits for more physiological needs that they have, and they have been able to state how much their, you know, mental health is improved, their mood, their depression, their anxiety. So yeah, I will kind of leave it at that, and am happy to answer any questions just about if that is something that you're interested in, or if you're interested in, you know, using therapy in conjunction with owning the pet that you already have. I can totally direct you in the right way. All right.
Thank you, Jackie. We appreciate that. So one of the reasons why we wanted to do this episode is that it can, when people talk about the power of animals and power of pets and things like that, sometimes there can be the feeling like, oh, this is hippy-dippy, pseudoscience kind of stuff. And obviously from Jackie's professional background, it's important to hear that this gives credence. It's not just our imagination. And validating the power of animals and support and being conducive to our mental health is actually relatively more of a recent development. We've always maybe known about it internally, but being validated in a scientific level and a research-based level is something that's really started to really take shape over the last 20 years, really inside of the 21st century. So it's really important, you know, having sort of Jackie's voice in this to sort of affirm that. And we just mentioned a number of different sort of animals, a number of sort of different terminologies. You've heard about therapy animals and maybe something like ESA, emotional support animals. And in getting further into this conversation, we thought it would be great to sort of talk about the different levels of animals out there and the types of access to supports out there. So we have another one of Hope for the Day's active surrogates and an ESA user themselves. Gracie Fisher is going to be joining us. Everyone say hi to Gracie.
Good.
Please grab a seat.
Right in the middle.
And so Gracie, Jackie touched on emotional support animals, but why don't you elaborate a little bit further? What does that mean? Are we talking, what is this, dogs? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, so I was doing my research. I do love research and statistics. I was doing my research earlier today on what exactly the difference between an emotional support animal and a therapy animal would be. And while most of the time you hear or encounter emotional support animals or therapy animals that are dogs or cats, lots of other species have been recognized, anywhere from birds to rodents like guinea pigs, even some reptiles, which is kind of where I'm coming from. None of my reptiles are certified necessarily. That's kind of where the real difference between an emotional support animal and a therapy animal comes in. So therapy animals, like therapy dogs that visit hospitals or maybe work with veterans or children, usually have to go through a training process in order to get their licensing. Meanwhile, for an emotional support animal, there kind of is an option for licensing, but it's not as strenuous. If you're discussing the importance of an emotional support animal, when it comes to taking it on an airline or for housing situation like rent, then you can get a letter from your psychiatrist saying, you know, Gracie uses her box turtle as her emotional support animal. Don't throw it out of our apartment. And that's basically it. But I don't have that letter for any of my animals, but they still provide me tons of comfort. I grew up with lots of different animals around the house. We've had dogs, cats, birds, gerbils, guinea pigs, hamsters, parakeets, turtles, anything you can think of. Sitting in my teeny tiny little apartment in Bridgeport right now, I have two leopard geckos, a crested gecko, and a box turtle that sit around my room and wait for me to come home from school every day and give them some lettuce and some love. So it's just, as Jackie mentioned, she didn't mention this part. I have struggled in the past with bouts of my own depression or anxiety, other diagnosed conditions, mental health conditions that I now live with, and I medicate and I manage them because they are conditioned and they can't be cured. But one part of my coping toolbox, as we call it, I would definitely include my pets in there. They act like emotional support animals for me in the way that they bring me comfort. They give me something to take care of, something to pay attention to. So when I wake up in the morning and my first thought is, I never want to leave bed again, I look around and I have all these reptiles scurrying around in my apartment and I think, oh no, I have to take care of them. But it's never an oh no, because I really love them. And just being around animals and being around something that's alive and that reacts to you when you feel alone and is excited when you go to feed it or whatever can bring so much support and comfort to someone who's feeling really lonely or isolated. I think that's one great thing about the emotional support animals.
Thank you so much, Gracie. Stay with us for a half second here. So, Jackie, listening to Gracie talk about, Gracie, I'd like you to touch on this also. Jackie, whether it's your actual patients, but just sort of in your professional background, have you ever seen individuals where maybe it never occurred to them that animals could be supportive and it's become a recommendation? Sort of what are your thoughts on that, where maybe people never even thought of the power of an animal?
Definitely. So with most of the families I work with, it's actually a big thing when I talk to the parents, because they will have like a middle schooler or high school where they can't get to like clean their room, go to school, do their homework, just fulfill these daily activities, and the parents are coming across as really nagging and kind of overwhelming, where I suggest, hey, what about something outside of themselves that they're responsible with, where they're seeing a direct correlation? If I do not take care of this, something will happen. And that's where it really occurs to the parents of, wow, we'll try it. And they kind of get out of their own ways of what they feel or believe about pets. And they do buy the pet, they give it a chance, and it's 99.9% successful. I've never personally witnessed a non-success story with it, but I'm sure there might be one out there.
Thinking about all those hamsters that were buried in my childhood backyard.
There's an outlier. So I would say mostly the parents are the ones who don't think of it because they kind of assume it's going to be a burden on them, where they're going to be the ones taking care of it. But I just give them the chance. I'm like, let's try it. Let's see if it works. Usually works. Mostly with adults, I would say every adult kind of has that thought in the back of their head. If they're not a pet owner, like, could I be a pet owner? And if you have that thought, it's probably a yes. And if you should try it. If it doesn't work out, there's always somebody who will take care of that pet for you and love it. So, to answer your question, yes, it has come up where people have never thought about it, and it does work, and it's really beneficial.
Thank you. So, Gracie, yes. The question I just want to prompt you with lived experience on this matter is sort of talking about when did it occur to you, just sort of real quickly, when did it occur to you that animals could be sort of a valuable or impactful in your life?
It actually didn't occur to me. Like, it occurred to me growing up, being around animals my whole life, you know, when you're crying and the dog comes over and, like, licks your tears off your cheek and you're like, that's gross, but it's sweet and I love you. But it really kind of hit me how truly impactful it is and made me now, when I'm older and stable and have a house and dog, I want to train that dog for it to be a therapy dog. That didn't really hit me until I had been hospitalized in inpatient psychiatric facilities myself. When I was a teenager, when I was a kid, and the highlight of my stay, like I'm at some kind of resort, was when they would bring the therapy dogs in, and they would you just get to sit in a room with the therapy dogs, and you don't have to talk about your emotional trauma, and you can just pet them. And at the hospitals I was at, they would hand out little cards that tell you like the dog's breed and how it was rescued and how old it is, and it's amazing. I just really love animals.
Perfect. Thank you, Gracie. Really appreciate that. Everyone, give a big hand for Gracie. So when we're talking about this idea around pets and animals and support, we see there's going to be a clinical side, and we're going to hear more about therapy animals specifically and their power in different ways. But we also want to just sort of talk about this idea. And hope of the day, when we're communicating mental health and getting people to understand it, we try to describe it as thinking of your mind like a bottle of soda. And if we're to shake up and build up a lot of pressure, it can explode all over the place. But if you open that cap slowly, or that top slowly, the pressure will sort of let out slowly. And let me just hear everyone visualize what that sounds like real quickly. What does that sound like when you open it slowly?
Louder.
And at Hope of the Day, we call that valving out pressure. So there's a lot of places that pressure is going to build. Two central areas. Things that we're born with. Genetic or biological factors of the way our body and brains are developed, or processes within our body, like the way chemical balances work. However, everyone is going to be exposed to the second way mental health challenges can come, which is external factors. We can all experience things. And one of the terms that's out there is sort of trauma, and we use the phrasing psychological injury because some people, because of stigma, think of trauma as it has to fit a certain scale. But mental health isn't sort of a hierarchy, it's a spectrum. There's things that are very visible, things that are less visible. But overall, how intense something impacts our quality of life is relative to the individual. And we say all that to talk about another factor that a big part of things that can impact our mental health is our relationship with our animals. Whether it's a dog or a horse or a box turtle, wherever Gracie went, these are relationships that we build with these creatures. We might, in our minds, because of stigma, think, well, there has to be a bifurcation between the way we feel about an animal and the way we feel about a human being or things like that. But that's not the reality of the way this works. We can build very strong emotional attachments to animals. And more importantly than building that attachment is if we were to lose an animal, we can find ourselves having a strong emotional reaction that, because of stigma or because we're told we're not supposed to feel the same way about animals, we might start to build a pressure that we don't know how to grieve with or don't know how to process because we don't want to validate how important this animal was to our emotional stability. So we thought it'd be very important to talk about what happens if we lose an animal that we built with, regardless of whether you have a mental health diagnosis or anything like that. We thought it'd be absolutely essential to talk about and validate talking about what happens and how do we process and live through it. So we have a very special guest. Her name's Pam. She's going to be coming on to talk about this a little bit. Pam, please come on. I want to say hi to Pam. So we're going to make sure, please take a seat. Welcome. And why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and what do you do? Yes,
okay,
please.
I got 5 minutes, 7 minutes.
You have 2 seconds.
I have 2 seconds.
Can say go.
Okay.
Oh, no, but take your time.
Take my time. Okay. First of all, my name is Pam Baron Kaplan. I am a professional grief, pet loss grief recovery, and life coach. And how I got here was kind of weird. But I can give it to you in a couple of words. I got to where I'm at right now because of love, because of loss, and a triple bypass. Now, triple bypass, yeah, the whole thing, the cardiac, open chest, and all that. But besides that, I was in love, and I fell in love with a yellow Labrador. I was pet deprived as a child, and I finally, at 37 years old, got my childhood sweetheart. And I love this girl. We had her for 17 years, and when she passed, I was devastated. Totally, life had changed. Now, back in the dark ages, when I was quite a bit younger, there was very little support for pet loss, let alone grief counseling. And so I decided this is where my life is going to go. And I dedicated myself to my very special guardian angel. Now, pet loss is something that has become more top of mind lately. And we can thank the researchers and scientists who are producing articles and social media just verifying that the loss of a dog, the loss of a cat, the loss of a pet is extremely difficult to get over. And what that does, I'm really glad they're finally doing this, but this lends credibility to the griever, to the pet parent. Finally, they can mourn a little bit more in public. Slowly, pet loss grief is coming out of the shadows. It's been in the dark for way too long. And it's about time pet loss grief gets a voice. And that's why I'm here. By the way, I'm going to share something with you tonight. I love acronyms, and I love decoding them. Did you know that PET is an acronym?
I didn't.
Anybody know?
No, I did not.
If you knew, it's only my family who knows it. Okay, you ready? PET as an acronym. Positive Energy Therapist.
Oh, yeah. I like it.
Okay, come on. Yeah. So next time you are with your pet, you will know because the benefits are so vast. Now, recently, you know, after having this heart attack and reliving everything else, I decided that it's about time to do something and make life easier for all of you when your pet passes. I've written a book, my very first book, 63, I'm 62, right? Is that what I am this year? Something like that. I'm 62 years old, and I have written my first book. I was incorporated. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I was in corporate America for 30,000 years and, you know, making a good salary, but never really happy. So I wrote this book, and it's called Tales, T-A-I-L-S, got it, Tales, of Unconditional Love, Your Journey to the Other Side of Pet Loss Grief. And in this book, as well as with my clients, I work with them on some of the common concerns and fears. Things such as, well, depression is huge. Isolation. They're afraid of judgment from other people. You know, let's say you lost your cat or your dog and it's been 3 weeks. Where do you go to talk about this? Because we feel isolated. We feel that we're going to be made fun of. So we hibernate. But the other biggie that comes up an awful lot in this arena is guilt. The unwanted passenger, as I call it. And in my practice, I work with my clients to help them banish the guilt and, if necessary, learn to forgive themselves, if necessary. But it's also moving towards acceptance. The hard thing about grief is coming to terms that this is final. You're not going to be able to get this loved one back. And so you've got a choice. The world is going to move on with or without you. Better to move on with you, and my belief is your pet doesn't want you to suffer after they're gone. There's all different ways to memorialize and tribute them. To give you an example, 4 years ago, this coming August 15th, I created a Facebook social media group called Pause to Celebrate. And we are approaching about 5,000 members. Maybe today I'll hit 5,000. Thank you. Yes, yeah, boy, what a headache to manage these people, though. No, I love you people. I love you all, my pack. Okay. But it's about 5,000 people who were invited because they lost a pet. It's for grieving pet parents. And in this particular group, I like to make sure that there's engagement and connection. And we're very different than, you know, the Rainbow Path and the Bridge support groups. We're not as big as them, but we're very different. I believe in connecting and engagement. And so to do that, we do a few little things that are different. We talk about the normalcy, because people don't feel normal after they've lost a pet, and trying to grieve for them. So we talk about that. We also talk about situations to help you heal along the way. One of the things that we do in the pack is a weekly AWA, another acronym. And that stands for the Angel Wing Announcement. And what that is that the PAC members register their angel so that on the date that they receive their wings, that they got their wings, we have a celebration every Sunday. This helps the pet parent. This helps the entire community because we get together, we honor, we celebrate the whole life. A couple other things that we do that other people don't that I know of is that we have Happy Heavenly Birthday at the Bridge. We celebrate the birthday of your angel as well. We do a couple other things. For example, we have an event called Tattoo Tuesday. How many of you here have a tattoo? Fun. Fingers raised. Okay. So on this particular day, we encourage our members to post their ink, what they got to memorialize, to tribute their pets, and talk about it. One last thing, one other thing we're doing, there's so many more, I can't remember, is that we do, what do we do? I can't remember. Oh, ask the pack. I'm a market researcher at heart. I love to ask questions, ask my pack, which is exactly what I called it, ask the pack. And so periodically, I will put out a question to the entire group for the purposes of engagement and connection within a community. People get to speak their truths in their voice, no judgment. It's a safe, soft landing spot for people to communicate about their grief. Now, Pause to Celebrate is a wonderful place to go. It is free. You can sign up on Facebook. It's just the best place that I know of. One thing I want to also share with you is that when our pets pass, they leave this gigantic hole in your heart. And our job, my job, is to help heal that heart. Have you ever heard of the saying, grief is love with nowhere to go? Have you ever heard that before? Grief is love with nowhere to go? Well, I got to tell you, grief has finally found a home. August 15th of 2015, it's called Pause to Celebrate. So grief comes over to the pack, comes over to me, private sessions. It is a wonderful thing to see people come in so close to being over the edge. And I've had people that are extremely close to committing suicide because of the breaking of the bond. And I have seen them go from this low to being regenerated, to rejuvenated, and understanding that you have been touched by a blessing to have this life in your life. And so in working with clients and working with my pack and my book, what we do is we try to turn the pain into pride and looking at this with gratitude. So, in wrapping up, I hope you'll check out my book. Again, it's called Tales of Unconditional Love. And again, that's T-A-I-L-S, Unconditional Love, Your Journey Through, Journey to the Other Side of Pet Loss Grief. My website, I love my name. It's pausetocelebrate.life. Love it. And the last thing that I want to say to you is when you're a part of a community, you're part of a pack, you feel free, you feel legitimatized, you feel validated that you are with like-minded people. Never will we tell you at Pause to Celebrate, I will never say to you, hey, it was just a llama. What? I have pet members who have llamas. We have llamas. We have horses. If it's got tails, fins, scales, hoofs, wings, everything, but as long as it has a heart, you're a part of the pack. So, thanks for having me today.
You know, I thought I was going to have a series of questions to touch on, but I feel like you sort of everything off on the head, and I kind of was thinking about this, and you know, Jackie, one of the things, you know, we're talking about sort of validating different animals and things like that. What would your attitude be to other clinicians who might, as Pam sort of touched on, might be a little bit dismissive of somebody grieving for an animal or something like that? Sort of, what would be your thoughts on that?
So I guess it would all be about, like, so my response, if I found out, I heard someone say, it's just a pet, I would say, well, what, that's your, you know, own experience, but are you really meeting the person about their experience and really kind of reframing it of, you know, there's a lot of things that you probably talk about day to day with your clients that have never been your experience, but they're coming to you, telling you about an experience that is extremely impactful and kind of teaching them how to validate it. I've never come across that before with another clinician, thankfully. But just in my own work, I actually had an experience recently where these parents were giving a laundry list of all of these significant things that have happened to the family over the past year. And I met with the little boy, and the first thing he said was, well, my dog died in October. And that was the most important thing to him at that moment. And so I'm going to validate it, and I'm going to show up for that moment. And so no matter the length that the person owned the pet, what type of pet it was, it's still their experience. It's still their loved one. And you got to just show up for them of what they need.
That's perfect. Thank you so much. And so, Pam, before we look, and you're going to stay after for Q&A.
Yes.
But a real quick question. You started this in 2015. You've got the book coming out. We'll make sure that when we publish this recording, we'll look for a line because we're going to want to know where to pick it up.
Thank you.
But I'd like to know, sort of, have you gotten anyone, you know, come back to this validating thing and this whole experience? Have you ever had somebody maybe join the group but think, sort of play like the pain Olympics? Maybe be like, well, I'm sad for a dog, but this person's sad for a goldfish, and they kind of need to chill out. What's your sort of attitude to that? You know what I mean? The people sort of putting animals on a high care. I know you said all are welcome, but sort of, mm-hmm. What would be your thoughts on that?
Okay. Can you hear me? Okay. First of all, in our pack, we have rules. And one of the number one rules is politeness. No bullying, and everybody is supportive to each other. They don't like that, they can go to another support group. But yes, we have had people that have an array of different types of animals. You know, there are times that I have differences of opinions. I've got my cat people, and I've got my dog people, and I will get them complaining about each other. But the bottom line is that we are there for the purposes to celebrate the whole life of an animal. And this animal was loved. It gave love. We give love, unconditional love, and it transcends all time. So, yeah, sometimes I have to step in like a mom and say, you know, I'm going to come back there and knock your heads together if you don't behave. So.
Thank you so much, Pam.
Very well.
All right, we'll give Pam a big hand. So let's pause for pets. And again, as I said, when we publish this episode, we'll make sure we have details in about where you can find the book when it's published. And so here we're talking about grieving for animals, and we've talked about sort of validating the power of therapy and things like that. But because we're sort of in a Star Trek moment where we're validating that animals really are not just a sort of a feeling we thought we had, but it's actually down to getting to, not a responsibility, it's getting to a scientific fact that animals can make a dramatic impact on our lives. Unfortunately, when it comes to mental health, a lot of the progression that happens in learning at the civilian level, because of the way stigma works, and I want everyone to understand this because you're going to hear this in every episode, the biggest obstacle to effective suicide prevention and mental health care is the stigma of silence, or a silence of stigma. Take your flip on that. And what we mean by that is stigma isn't just a buzzword or a hashtag. It's social and cultural factors that try to dictate how we express ourselves. When people say things like boys don't cry, or try to tell someone who identifies as female, you can't wear that, that is trying to police and dictate how someone expresses and presents themselves. This is the core element that creates silence. And when you math it out with the loss of a pet, for instance, as Pam's talking about, you might be sad for that first week and openly sad to people. Oh, your dog, your cat died. We get it. But if you go 6 weeks, you go 6 months and find yourself still unable to sort of carry on a basic daily task, you have to stop, maybe cry, shed some tears, people might find themselves feeling silly to let others know that they're having trouble in their day-to-day life with that grief. And the reason they're feeling silly isn't because the animal wasn't a strong emotional connection. The silliness or the feeling of judgment is coming from what others might say about themselves, what others might think of you, that you're weak or you're overdramatic. All those things that silence us and communicate our internal experiences, that's what stigma is made of. So unfortunately, stigma operates in a hierarchy. In our society, it creates a sort of hierarchy about mental health, that there's more important things and less important things. And we all become subject to that. Our gender becomes subject to that. Our ethnicity becomes subject to that. Our economic status becomes subject to that. And when proactive prevention is about breaking through that. My point being, though, is that a lot of innovations in mental health, unfortunately, have to pierce through that veil of stigma. And because of that, the place where a lot of mental health innovations begin starts with those who have served in the military. Because of the way stigma works, there's a shaping factor that will validate the experiences, rightfully so, of the intensive experiences one can have in the military, but might dismiss the experiences of a sexual assault survivor, might dismiss the experiences of a 10-year-old in a junior high or a high school student. And that's all stigma-based. That's all because of all the things I just mentioned. But I also bring that up to say that a lot of our innovations have unfortunately come from improvements in supporting and responding to the adverse experiences of our veterans. And it's an unpretty system that that's happening, because it's almost the only place in the world where trickle-down actually is provable. Because we start to appreciate other people's experiences with anxiety, psychological injuries, when we learn that someone who has served didn't necessarily have to be on the very, very front line or be in extended levels of combat to come home with wounds that are not visible. And I also bring that up because when you look at the history of validating therapy animals, the root causes of this expansion to the civilian world starts with the expansion of therapy animals to veterans. That's just the reality of it. I wish I could tell you a different picture, but how we treat animals and therapy animals and ESAs at a civilian level started with the expansion of, oh, this soldier found a lot more support with a connection to this animal than with cognitive behavioral therapy or just sitting in a VA somewhere. And that's just the truth of it. So it's very important that we wanted to talk about that. So we have two very special guests with us, as all of our guests are honored. I want to introduce both Ryan and Roger, if you'd please come up. We're going to be asking a few different questions here, but why don't we first start with introductions? I'm going to go this way and then come back, and then we're going to start by talking about Pets for Vets. So quickly, just introduce yourselves, please.
So I'm Ryan Shannon. I'm the director for what will be known as Project Red Team for Hope for the Day. It's the military branch of suicide prevention, and we'll get into that story a little bit more as we go here.
Hi, I'm Roger Rosenquist. I'm the director of the Chicagoland chapter of Pets for Vets.
So, I mean, right now we're just going to start with a real simple module. What does Pets for Vets do? And, you know, sort of talk about how you got involved with it. And, yeah, we'll just start right there. Keep it real short.
Great. Well, first of all, I want to thank you, Carl, for the perfect introduction in terms of the benefit that a lot of our veterans have been able to realize from the power of the animal-human bond. So our Pets for Vets is a national nonprofit organization. And the Chicagoland chapter was started back in 2012. Our mission is to assist our military veterans, especially those who have been diagnosed with PTSD or TBI, by pairing them with a companion animal and helping them realize the benefit of that animal-human bond that the previous panelists have done a great job of, you know, explaining what those benefits are. So I don't think I need to go into that. So the way we operate is that Most of the veterans that come to us are referred to us through the VA organization. Most of them have been diagnosed with some level of PTSD, and most of the VA healthcare providers are familiar with our organization, so they tend to refer them to us. When we get a veteran who's applied for a companion animal, and we say animal because we provide mostly dogs, but we also provide companion cats, and there's been some cases of birds, not in our chapter, but whatever type of animal, as Gracie had alluded to, what is, you know, connects with that veteran. I know there's also one case of a veteran that wanted to get a lizard in one of the other chapters, and he got that. So once we receive an application from the veteran, we assign it to a trainer, and since 99% of the applications are for dogs, we recruit certified dog trainers to handle that. And once the trainer gets that case assigned to them, they initially spend time getting to know the veteran through a series of phone calls and then a face-to-face visit, and then eventually a home visit to try to understand, you know, what type of dog or animal the veterans is going to benefit from. And once they have a good understanding of that, the trainer then goes out to a rescue or a shelter to find the dog or the animal that's going to be a good fit for them. We only adopt and train animals from rescues, from shelters, because that's part of our mission. So the mission is really to provide a second home to both the animal that we're rescuing and to the military veteran, and hopefully they'll bond and both benefit from that. The process that we go through is fairly extensive. It can take up to a year from when we first start working with the veteran until we actually deliver an animal to them, and that's because we don't believe in just going out and adopting a shelter animal and delivering to the veteran and saying, here you go, good luck. Because any of us that have had dogs know that is probably not going to work. So key to what we do is making sure that the dog's been properly trained. And that's why it's important that we recruit certified dog trainers to do that. And actually, we do a small number of cats. And the cats also have to be trained. So I currently have a need. I only have one cat trainer, and I need some additional cat trainers. So if anybody knows a cat trainer, please let me know. We currently have two veterans that are waiting to receive a cat. That training process. So then, just to back up a minute, once the trainer finds the animal that they think is going to be a good fit, we adopt it into our organization. We immediately place it into a foster home. That's located close enough to the trainer so the trainer can get to the animal two or three times a week and train the animal. The training process usually takes anywhere from 6 to 12 weeks, but it can take longer. Depends on the animal. Depends on the veteran. The training is essentially what I call good citizenship training, but it also can be customized to the particular veteran's needs. We don't train service animals, service dogs. So we make that real clear with the veteran from the start. That's why we call them companion animals. But some of the trainers can do some specific training that can be beneficial to the veteran. For example, if the veteran has PTSD that manifests itself with nightmares, and the veteran might want a dog that's going to sleep, you know, close to them or in the bed with them and be able to recognize when they're having an anxiety attack. And a good dog trainer can actually kind of train the dog to be sensitive to that, even though that tends to be a kind of an innate thing within the animal. A trainer can help kind of bring that out or at least identify it in the animal before they adopt the animal. So that's kind of some of the more subtle things that they do. Once the trainer decides that the dog is ready, we then deliver the animal to the veteran. It's actually the first time the veteran sees the animal. We call it match day, and we deliver the animal to the veteran, and we have a little celebration. We provide the veteran with all of the initial supplies and equipment and food that they'll need. We also spend a lot of time before that making sure the veterans understand what it's going to take care of an animal going forward. Again, it's part of making sure that we're helping the veteran, not laying another level of challenge onto them by providing animal that they're not prepared to take care of. So that's a big part of what we do, especially for veterans that may not have had an animal before. The trainer will take a lot of time talking with the veteran, making sure they understand the responsibility the veteran has for this animal that's going to be totally dependent on them. And which, again, as I think Gracie referred to, that's part of that human-animal bond, to know that this animal that gives you unconditional love is totally dependent on you. And if you don't fill its water bowl, it's going to go thirsty. And so it's really an important part of what we do in terms of working with the veterans. And then once we deliver the animal, we try to stay in touch with the veteran and make sure that it's working. Unfortunately, it doesn't always work. Sometimes the veteran will realize once they get the animal that, you know, I'm really not ready for this. I'm not prepared for it, even though we do everything we can do to prepare them. And in those cases, we always take the animal back, and we would never return the animal to the shelter. We then go about finding another home for the animal. Either, in most cases, it's a civilian home. And, in fact, we've had two animals in the last 2 years where the veterans, to their credit, once they got the dog and had the dog for several weeks, decided they just were not up to the responsibilities of caring for a dog, and they returned the animal to us. And in both cases, we were able to find good civilian homes for the animal. So we still accomplished, you know, part of our mission. And then we also, you know, make sure in talking with the veterans, we don't leave them feeling bad about that. You know, in fact, we you know, tell them, you know, we're glad you recognize this and you did the right thing by working with us to return the animal. So it can be challenging, but I've been involved with the chapter, for instance. It first started back in 2012 in various aspects. We fostered animals that were in training, and I took over as director back in 2016. And we're in the process of really growing the chapter because our mission, which was set when it was first started back in 2012, was to serve the Chicagoland area, which is the Chicago proper and the surrounding Collier County communities, big area. So we need lots of trainers and lots of foster families. Fortunately, we're up to, we just recruited our fifth certified dog trainer. Our goal is to get up to eight trainers. And around that whole geographic area. So if anybody listening to this knows of any trainers that would like to help out, trainers are the, I should mention that all of us, including me, are all unpaid volunteers with the exclusion of the trainers. We do reimburse the dog trainers just because they're so critical to what we do. So, of course, we reimburse them for any of their expenses, and then we also pay them for their time, which is only a fraction of what they would charge if they were doing training through their own practice. And most of the trainers that work with us have their own dog training practices. So they're not doing it for the money. They're doing it, you know, to be part of a good organization. And then the second biggest need we have is a lot of foster candidates that are located close enough to those trainers. And that's my second biggest need. So if anybody is interested in fostering an animal while it's in training, again, that's about a 6 to 12 week period, please get in touch with us. Our website is www.petsforvets.com. That's the national pet site. And then it's /Chicagoland, or you can go to the drop-down menu for chapters and find Chicagoland chapter. We're the only chapter in Illinois. Illinois could really use another chapter downstate and upstate because we do get applications from veterans in those areas that we just don't have the resources to help at this time.
Thank you so much, Roger. I want you to sit tight because I have a few different questions. I just wanted to get Ryan in here really quickly to talk about this sort of intersection related. So Project Red, I'm actually, you know, just preview it a little bit, and then I'll ask my questions to both of you.
So Project Red is going to be the military suicide prevention initiative that we're going to roll out. So similar education, just tailored more towards what we as veterans, spouses, active duty members go through. There's no criteria. We aren't going to make you be a combat vet. We aren't going to make you be sexual assault survivor. None of that. Anything can cause that trauma. So it's all based off my story. I have a service dog, not an emotional support animal. So I know the benefits of this. She doesn't give a shit that I'm broken. She doesn't care. If I break down and I'm this big, tall dude who's weeping in a corner, yeah, she don't care. She's there for me. She's a pit bull. So most people don't want to come pet her when I have her out too, which is really awesome because everybody wants to pet your dog when you bring it out to Walmart and stuff like that. My story, though, so I have I got emotional side. I got physical side. I'm going to lose my leg, so she's trained for stuff like that. I have incomplete paralysis. I put somebody on watch with a weapon who used that weapon to complete suicide. I was the first responder to that. So, and then battling my own darkness. So I wrote my letter. My wife stopped me. I didn't complete, but I was there. So I've been to the bottom, and like clockwork, today I'm the way here. I got notified that somebody we served with completed suicide last night. So every 3 months it comes. I'm sick of it. It's shit. I don't want to deal with it anymore. And I'm here to show that once you get past that dark tunnel, you're still going to have dark days, but you're never going to hit that bottom again. You're going to come through. There's going to be some really cool shit that happens to you after that. We can talk more about that later. I got pictures. It's kind of cool. But that's my story. So, and that's what Project Red's really about, right? Take what Hope for the Day is already doing and just blow it up. Let's not, in the nonprofit world for veterans, I'm sure you can relate to this. There's a lot of, there's a hierarchy. It's not on a spectrum. You have to serve in combat to do this, but I didn't serve in combat. I still watched my boy take his own life. So what's stopping me from having the same trauma? You know what I mean? And, we don't want to be part of that, and we want to make it inclusive to everybody. And when I deployed, it wasn't just me. It was my wife and my 8-month-old son were deploying too because dad wasn't home to do with anything. I wasn't there to feed my kid. I wasn't there to burp him, none of that stuff. So we want to bring spouses and family members into this as well because they go through the same stuff we do. And that's where we're at. Anything else, Mike? Red. So what does red mean? We have a saying every Friday. It's remember everyone deployed. We're switching that up a little bit to reminding everyone deployed that it's okay to not be okay. Big, burly, muscular. I'm not muscular, but big, burly military dudes. Wipe some dirt on it. Move on. Paralysis, you can't put any dirt in it to make you move on. So sometimes things suck and they don't go away. PTSD is not going away. TBI, it's not going away. And that's one of those things that I kept hearing when I came home was, it's going to be okay. You're going to get better. That's what I was constantly told. You're going to get better. And I'm like, when? When does that happen? Because I don't feel like it. So, but that's what Project Red's intentions are, and we're going to blow it up and move forward with it.
Thank you so much for sharing that. So my question to you both is from both for your perspective, Roger, and for you, Ryan, what would you say, what would you encourage? Well, so I guess I'll prompt this as a question first. People get recommended to Pets for Vets. Do you ever see any obstinance like, oh, that's not going to help, this isn't going to do anything, I don't see any use for that? And sort of what would sort of be some words you might give to folks who maybe they haven't connected even with the VA, but they're thinking about it because an animal might be, they may not be feeling comfortable talking to someone all the way out. And having, you know, there's, you know, service animal, but a companion can be a road into healing. So I would kind of, I think it would be important, especially for our listeners to know, what would be something you might advise or talk to someone about, at least considering, because Pets for Vets might be an avenue towards something more intensive down the road. So,
sure, that's a great question. So, I should mention that we don't only provide companion animals to veterans who have been diagnosed with PTSD or TBI. We will provide a companion animal to any veteran that comes to us and would like to get a companion animal. It just so happens that the majority that apply, you know, have been diagnosed with PTSD. And then that also gets to the fact that any veteran out there, whether they have PTSD or TBI, doesn't have to go through a VA organization to come to us. They can go to our website. It's right on the first page of the website. There's an apply button, and it's a real easy online form to fill out to apply for a companion animal. It gets forwarded to me. I review it, and then we put it onto our list. Unfortunately, we do have a waiting list of about 20, I'm sorry to say, veterans who are waiting to get animals just because we don't have enough dog trainers to assign to them, and because it does take so long, you know, like up to anywhere from 3 months to a year once it's been assigned to a trainer to complete that training process and get it delivered to the veteran. But we try to encourage them, and most of the veterans are extremely understanding when we tell them, you know, we're sorry, there's a wait, but we will, you know, we'll get in touch with you as soon as we're able to get your case assigned. And then the other part of your question was, do we ever encounter anyone that has misgivings maybe about it? And when that usually comes up with us is when usually a veteran who's come through their VA healthcare provider will you know, they're taking the recommendation of that individual and saying, well, this could help me, so I'm going to try it. So they'll apply, and they may not have given it a whole lot of thought at that point, but once the trainer who's assigned to their case begins the interview process with them, which again is fairly lengthy, it's a series of phone calls first, then it's face-to-face visits, then it's a home visit, they get to know each other pretty well. And during that process, the trainer is really educating them on what it's going to be involved with taking care of a dog and finding out whether they've had a dog before, finding out whether they might have many challenges. For example, they might have anger management issues that they're going to have to make sure they are addressed. And during that process when some of the veterans will step back and say, you know, I'm not sure this is right for me. And I have to say the trainers that one of the great things that's come out of me being involved with the organization is I'm not a dog trainer myself, but I've gotten to know a lot of dog trainers since I've been involved, and trainers are just great people, and they are naturals. Even though many of them don't have any experience in working with veterans and talking with, especially veterans that might have a severe case of PTSD, they do get training from our national organization on how to do that in the right way. But they're naturals for it in terms of really taking to it and being able to speak with a veteran that might have misgivings and helping them work through that indecision and kind of helping them come up with the right decision.
Well, Lisa, I'm sorry, you want to encourage others when they're thinking about it, kind of dismissing.
I'd go through kind of my story with it. We adopted my dog before I got my final injury. She was supposed to be my kid's dog to grow up with, and then I was wheelchair bound for about 3 months, and she would not go anywhere but on my lap. Like, she was a puppy. We didn't train her to do that. I didn't want her to do that. I wanted her off me. She would not go anywhere. She would sit on my lap, cruise around the house with me and things like that. My wife's like, it's going to be your service dog. And I'm like, I don't want a service dog. And it's going to be your service dog. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Come home. 2 days after I come home, there's an organization on the news talking about service dogs for veterans. And my wife just looks at me across the room, and I'm like, damn it. Like, this is going to happen, isn't it? So took her to get evaluated. 2 years later, she became graduated full service dog. She can turn lights on. She can brace, things like that, like help me up. She's a big old fat cat, basically. But during that training, I learned a lot about me, and I learned a lot about dogs. So dogs can smell tears. I don't know if anybody here knew that. It's part of your training. They force you to cry so your dog can smell your tears. So now when I go to sleep in the 3 to 5 days that I relive some of the most horrific things you can imagine, and I wake up, she's right there just staring at my face, just right there, and his big old floppy jowls, and it stops. The dream's over. I'm not in that part of the world anymore. I'm right here with this dog staring at me, and she's just licking tears, like you mentioned. You don't want it, but it helps. It absolutely helps. I'm not punching my wife in the bed anymore, which she appreciates in my sleep. I'm like, what are you talking about? She's like, I'm a wife beater now because of dreams that I've had where I'm flailing and things like that. No, my 80-pound pit bull is right there next to me, cuddled up. And she does her job. So it's those things. If you have reservations about it, I mean, it's you have to take care of that dog. Like when my dog dies, we're going to have a whole new series of things me and the therapist are going to talk about. I'm getting that card later. It's probably my biggest fear right now is what happens when she goes, I'm done. I don't know what to do at that point. So, but it is things like that. But my story as well is I spent the first 6 months that I came home in my house. I didn't want to go outside. I couldn't go to a Walmart because I felt like this uncontrollable cloud was just engulfing me, and I didn't want to be around people and things like that. And then my service dog came, and she learned how to brace. And I could go to Walmart, and she would brace because she felt my anxiety kicking up. She also has a sweet vest. I have a TBI, so I forget things pretty easily. I just put notes in that thing. Pop, pop, pop. Like, oh, shit, I was supposed to get apples today. Yeah, there it is right there. So, I mean, there's the physical aspect of it as well. I wouldn't be able to be director of Project Red Team if I didn't have her to get through things. And she is retired now, except for when I go to sleep at night, because speaking and telling the story is my new therapy out in the world. And I've coped with it a lot better. But when I need her, she's there. It doesn't matter where I'm at. Bathroom, she's there. It's weird. She's like it's like a kid, just follows you around. So, but yeah, that's what I'd tell them, kind of explain it. I didn't want a therapy dog. I didn't want a service dog. I got one, and it changed everything. So,
thank you so much. Roger and Ryan, please go and do it again. Please, if you can, stay after if anyone has any questions. And again, just so everyone understands, that's www.projectpetsforvets.com. And Roger, you're also, it's on Facebook too, same thing?
Yes.
Vetsforpets.com on Facebook and other social media as well.
Pets for Vets Chicagoland.
Pets for Vets Chicagoland. Thank you so much. And before we move on, there were some terms thrown around. I think it's always important with our recordings to make sure everyone's sort of caught up to speed. So, Jackie, there was two terms thrown out there, PTSD and TBI. I'll just have this mic. So PTSD and TBI. One, just sort of talk about those acronyms really quickly, and what's going on with them?
Definitely. So I will start with PTSD. It's post-traumatic stress disorder. So it is a response that your body and brain are having in the moment of a traumatic experience. So how I like to explain it, where normal memories and daily experiences, they kind of fit really nicely in your mind, like a card catalog in the library. I don't know if anyone remembers those, but it's, you know, it's really easy to find. You can remember when it happened. It's just very organized. So when the human body and brain are experiencing a traumatic experience, and it doesn't matter, you know, the level of what that is, if you are processing it as traumatic, it's going to store itself as a memory differently than it would if it was just a day-to-day experience. And that kind of gets just thrown in your brain in a jumbled, disorganized way where it could come up at any time. It doesn't matter what the smell is, the sound is, the sight is, whatever that may be, that memory is going to come out. And so that's kind of how the PTSD kind of happens. I don't know if that makes sense, but so that's the traumatic response that's happening. So the post, meaning it happened in the past, you're having a traumatic response. So the other one was TBI, traumatic brain injury, correct? And so that is when your body and your brain are experiencing that trauma, your brain's chemicals and your brain makeup start to change because you're responding differently. And so it creates kind of an injury, just as if you would injure a bone or a muscle after time and wear and tear, your brain is also kind of experiencing an injury in a similar way. So I hope I explain those the best of my ability.
You can have a developmental injury, so like literally like a concussion can lead to a TBI. A sonic concussion can lead to a TBI, as well as an intensive emotional experience. And the reason they're all categorized together, psychological and a physiological impact, is because even if it's a psychological impact, there can be psychosomatic results, which means that there can be physical manifestations, including anything from temporary or prolonged paralysis, loss of vision, things like that. Same thing with a physiological traumatic brain injury, temporary or prolonged paralysis, different sorts of like short circuiting in the brain as well too. So that's a perfect definition. Thank you, Jackie, and thank you, Ryan, for the enhancement. And we talk about that because learning about the veterans' experience, what we've learned and seen the proven impact from the way animals are able to support veterans, that has, like a lot of mental health studies and experiences, eventually you get clinicians and other people wondering, well, if it works for them, let's experiment with it in the civilian populations. And there have been therapy animals out in the world for decades, but in terms of their serviceability, their use, and their involvement and application, it has dramatically expanded over the last 20 years. And it's been both for one-to-one traumatic experiences where we connect that with sort of the veteran experience, but you see therapy animals going into places that maybe in 1995 you wouldn't have thought of, bringing animals into places like cancer clinics, bringing animals into places where recent victims of abuse, sexual assault for youth, for adults. Now you even see therapy animals going into places like high schools and colleges and junior highs, not just unfortunately after something like a mass shooting or an intense piece of violence. Sometimes you see therapy animals during finals because it helps with our collective mental health. And so we wanted to close out this show with a resident guest of Sip of Hope Cafe, who is just the star all the time and really been such a positive. If you were here in the shop, you can hear the energy around our two guests in the back. But we wanted to introduce you to the facilitator that who is connected with Sip of Hope Coffee Bar and has been just the conduit of bringing such a wonderful, beautiful little dog around. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like everyone to meet Sandy. Everyone say hi to Sandy. And Sandy, please introduce yourself formally and where you're from.
I will. Thanks. Hi, everybody. My name is Sandy Thomas, and that little furry girl, the big girl back there, is my dog, Tesla. And I am here with my friend Heidi and her dog, Levi. We're here with the dogs today because they are therapy dogs. I started coming to Sip of Hope, boy, about a year ago, I think, when I first visited, and I really saw that the benefit of having a therapy dog here would just be wonderful. I lead a therapy dog ministry at Willow Creek Church in Barrington. So I've been doing this a while. Our church is a very large church, so we take our dogs and do a lot of different things with them. One thing I noticed that we have been talking about so far is service dogs, emotional support animals. Those dogs, those animals are going to be for you. Your service dog is providing a service to you individually. And it's really important that that service dog only pays attention to you. Because if something happens, if your dog, somebody comes up and says hello, and your dog is supposed to be working with you, something possibly disastrous could happen. The difference with therapy dogs is their job is to love everyone always. I stole that from our church. But it's really true because, you know, the dogs, we look for a dog that wants to say hello to every single person here. And a lot of times, we do a lot of training with these dogs, and the therapy dogs have to be certified. So they go to school. They go to school with us. Tesla and I are certified as a team. We go to school together. She learns how to be a great dog and how to love everyone always. I learn how to pay attention to her. I learn how to read the people that I'm sitting with. I learn how to, when I'm with children with autism, we do a lot of work with children with autism, how to help them overcome their anxiety by maybe saying, by maybe grabbing, taking the dog and saying, Houston, I know you're nervous to go into this room, but can you help me take Tesla into the room? And all of a sudden, that child has forgotten what they're afraid of, and we've gone into the classroom, and everything's fine. Our dogs, we do a lot with kids' grief workshops. We do a lot of kids' stuff just in general, but we do a lot of kids' grief workshops. And you know what? It's hard to tell your story as an adult. But it's really hard to tell your story when you're a child that maybe has just lost a parent, a sibling, and you're plopped down in this workshop. Mom and dad dropped you off, and you need to process. These strangers want you to process. So we come in with the dogs, and the dogs will just sit nearby, and it gives the person, whether it's a child, whether it's an adult, just a safe place to feel okay, to feel welcome. Because dogs don't judge, and all dogs don't judge. So they do love everyone. So they feel comfortable coming in and sitting down and just petting the dog, and then we let everything go from there. You know, and part of our training is also when we're somewhere with, when we're visiting, that's our official therapy dog term, is when we go to work, we're visiting. And that's what the dogs learn. Let's go visit now. So we'll go over and say hello to somebody. But part of my job is to notice the person that's sitting on the side quietly that really wants to come say hi, but maybe has social anxiety. Maybe is really having a hard time right now. And so what a lot of times we'll do is I'll go over and I'll sit nearby and I'll just say, hi, you know, this is my dog Tesla. Do you like dogs? Are you, you know, would you like to say hi to her? And then, you know what, usually a conversation starts and people just want to be seen. They want to be heard. They want to be loved. They want connection. And we just go from there.
Absolutely beautiful. And I have like a perfect like line item site over to Tesla right now. So okay. So it's interesting. In my long before Hope for the Day, my earliest nonprofit work was as a peer supporter and advocate, lived experience advocate with children of sexual and physical abuse. And one of the most powerful things I'd ever seen with my own eyes was unfortunately, an adolescent who had an intensively prolonged abuse experience that was almost catatonic, almost non-speaking. And one of the most powerful things ever was even getting them to sort of talk about their experiences, even to the level of working with law enforcement. There was an animal, it was not a therapy animal, but there was an animal who sort of was one of the clinicians, and they connected with the animal, and they sort of accidentally found out that, like, when this animal was around the youth, started to light up a lot, and then it got to the point that, you know, over the next course of the months, this individual would submit a testament eventually, an affidavit, and eventually it would go all the way up to being able to go into, it led them to a court case, a criminal prosecution case, where they testified, or they would only testify with the animal with them, and justice was brought for that individual. But so one of the things I'd love to ask you about with therapy animals is sort of talking about What are, in your mind, what do you think, as you go to place, what are sort of some big impactful things you've noticed? I'm sure, you know, qualitatively, everyone's eyes light up, and sort of what it might be like one or two of your favorite sort of experiences. You might love them all, but what might be like some...
Hours.
Yeah, okay. But what would be something that sits out for you?
You know, we... Tess and I have been doing our work together for 5 years now, and I, in fact, got a puppy because this is my passion. I love every minute that I do this. It doesn't matter where we go. There's a lot of times I walk away with tears in my own eyes because we just made a difference with somebody. You know, we, at the beginning of June, Heidi and I both took both of our dogs to a summer camp for kids in the foster care system. This is the third time we've gone. It's up in Lake Geneva, and we spend the week up there. And let me tell you, these kids have hard stories. Hard stories, young kids. And, you know, sometimes that some kids will come back year after year. But there are many kids that maybe just come one summer, it might be their first summer, and they're petrified. You know, they don't know what to expect. They're not used to anything like that. They've been bounced around from family to family. And sometimes they get to camp, and they don't want to talk to anybody. Of course, that's not the experience we want for them. So we will often use the dogs, you know, and a little child, one of the little boys last summer wouldn't talk to anybody, wouldn't participate in anything. And Tess and I noticed, and we slowly made our way closer and closer. And you know how kids can be. You know, he wouldn't look, but I could see he was peeking. And so eventually we got close enough where Tesla lay down right at his feet, which is what therapy dogs do. They either hug you by leaning up against you. They lay down at your feet. They may put their head on your lap, just like our own dogs. But she gained the confidence of this little boy, and they became buddies. And she would, we started really by asking him if he would take her for a walk with me. So then, you know, we kind of got a connection between the two of us. He wasn't afraid of me. He was comfortable with Tesla. And we would walk over where the other kids were and what the other kids were doing. And by the camp was a week long, and by the end of the camp, every time he saw her, the two of them would go to each other because they had literally developed a connection. And anytime they went and they sat together, Tesla would lay down next to him and put her head on his lap and fall asleep. And she doesn't do that with everybody. So they do definitely have a connection. They will sense when somebody is hurting and let us know. And our job as the handlers of the dogs is to pay attention to that and to read it. You know, I've had some amazing experiences here, you know, at Sip of Hope. You know, this is an amazing place. It really is. Because it's not just a coffee shop with a great idea. It's a coffee shop that's a community. I mean, I have seen over and over again, people that come here feel like they belong. And I think that's what people need. And so Tess and I came one Saturday, and Brian had put it up on Facebook. And so we had people that came, wanted to come in and see her. And we were sitting in the back, and there was a large group around us, but there was a woman sitting up at the counter. And Brian had come over to me, and he said, "Hey, there's a woman up at the counter, and she's, you know, came to see Tesla, but she's having some social anxiety. So, you know, maybe you could pop over and say hello to her when you get a chance." So as we were able to break away, I walked over, and you know, stood at the counter because I didn't want to walk right up to her and say, hey, did you want to talk to my dog? But she noticed that Tesla was there, and her eyes lit up, and she came down, you know, off of the bench, and she just wrapped her arms around her, and she started crying. And I just stood there, and I just let them be, because that's what Tess is supposed to do. She was supposed to let her just get her emotions out. And then she stood up, and we started talking, and she was having troubles, and she was had some thoughts of suicide. And, you know, I talked with her for a few minutes. We sat down on the floor right in front of the counter because, you know, you go to them. You know, I can't say, oh, honey, let's go sit down over here where we have more space. Right there, she needed us, and so we sat down right there with them, and we just talked, and I told her how much she's loved, and she petted Tesla, and she gave her kisses, and you know what? I walked away from here that day just teary-eyed, because I can't solve everybody's problems. Tesla can't solve everybody's problems. Your service dog can't, but you know what? We can make just a little bit of difference. And if we made her feel better and think about things a little bit differently, then that's what I do, and that's my purpose.
That's perfect. And you know, Sandy, I want to, with the respect to time, I'm going to ask our guests if they want to hang back. If there's Q&A, we'll do it sort of off recording. Based on what you were saying and really thinking about all of our tremendous guests, I think about a quote that I actually just was introduced to with a recent guest on our recordings who are doing a project called Wide Wonder Tour. And it was the Cruz Harringtons, and they were quoting a different person. But they introduced this quote to me that seems relevant right now. And they said that connection was the currency of wellness. And I'd never heard that before, never thought about it before, but the more and more I hear experiences, especially as we're just sharing, I think that's a really good message for us to take home today, is that whether it's a therapy animal, whether it's a dedicated service animal, an emotional support animal, they provide another avenue, an outlet for connection for us, because this world, we understand, can be hard, and not everyone is going to be able to necessarily naturally and organically connect with another human being. Not everyone may be in a place, a headspace where that's going to work. But the beauty of unjudging eyes of an animal, or a lizard, mammal, any sort of creature that we can connect with is an opportunity for us to get in touch with ourselves and find that balance. So as we close out today, I want to first give a big round of applause to all of our guests, please. From our co-host Jackie, shout out to Jackie, Gracie Fisher, Pam, Roger and Ryan, Sandy, and, you know, shout out to Heidi. You came, what's up? I want to thank all of our guests, because ultimately, just like Sip of Hope is a cafe and Hope of the Day as an organization, the name of the game here is that we're in this together. And that recognizing it's okay not to be okay is a conversation to start and a place to begin healing and finding treatment and management. And we do that as a community. And it's not easy to join the community, but, you know, seeing you all here is part of that positive message. Joining a place like Simple Coffee Bar is part of that message. But this is the big important thing I want you to all take away. We got a little pink cards here, and we're doing a project online at Hope of the Day Proper, focusing on something called Self-Care Summer. Visiting the shop and hollering at little Tesla, that's a way of self-care, just taking 5 minutes to pet. So what I want to do before we close out is, if you have a chance after we've wrapped up, fill out a little card and take a picture with our amazing content creator, Chris Cortez, over here, because we like to share that with our online community. And I want to sort of leave on, yeah, and we'll do it right over here. So you fill out that card after we're done here. So This is also our art installation that's going up. It's the custom buttons thing. Everyone take a look at it. Love it. Appreciate it. We'll be creating an opportunity to make more buttons later.
Shout out to Busy Beaver Button Company, celebrating 50 years of pride.
Thank you, Busy Beaver Button Company. So finally, we're just going to close out this way by saying Conversations Cafe can never talk about a topic in all of its different nuances. We take small bites, and we hope to return to this conversation about the value and impact that pets have in our lives. But the thing I wanted to close out with is remembering this. This conversation is important right now, but we make impact and we make change when we don't let this conversation just stop tonight. So make sure when you're taking this collateral or taking the stories that you've heard today, share them with your friends and family. Share this podcast with your friends and family, because the idea is to take this conversation on mental health and not just leave it stopping in this space, but carrying it with you into your own personal space. That's how we all become positive agents of impact. And I want to make sure that we remember that, because somebody may find an avenue to wellness and improvement through an animal that they may not have thought. And if you're the one to help think about that and break that silence in their own mind, you can help impact somebody else's life. We are all in this together, and it's important to drive home that it's okay not to be okay. So on behalf of Hope for the Day, Sip of Hope Coffee Bar, Anthologies of Hope, Banyan Treatment Center, AFSP, and all of you wonderful people, I want to thank you for having a great episode. Good night, everybody.
Thank you so very much for joining us this week. We hope you had as good a time listening as we had recording the interview. Don't forget to check out anthologiesofhope.com/playlist for all the awesome songs that will get added each week. You can find us on social media at Anthologies of Hope on Facebook and Instagram, and Anthologies Pod on Twitter. It would be great if you could subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or Google, and leave us a review. As always, remember, everyone has a story, and it's about time we start listening.